exists, evil, in the face of a house. And yet somehow a maniac juxtaposition, a badly turned angle, some chance meeting of roof and sky, turned Hill House into a place of despair. More frightening because the face of Hill House seemed awake, with a watchfulness from the blank windows and a touch of glee in the eyebrow of a cornice. Almost any house caught unexpectedly or at an odd angle can turn a deeply humorous look on a watching person. Even a mischievous little chimney or a dormer like a dimple can catch up a beholder with a sense of fellowship. But a house arrogant and hating, never off guard, can only be evil. This house, which seemed somehow to have formed itself, flying together into its own powerful pattern under the hands of its builders, fitting itself into its own construction of lines and angles, reared its great head back against the sky, without concession to humanity. It was a house without kindness, never meant to be lived in, not a fit place for people, or for love, or for hope. Exorcism cannot alter the countenance of a house. Hill House would stay as it was until it was destroyed.
I should have turned back at the gate, Eleanor thought. The house had caught her with an atavistic turn in the pit of the stomach, and she looked along the lines of its roofs, fruitlessly endeavoring to locate the badness, whatever dwelt there. Her hands turned nervously cold so that she fumbled, trying to take out a cigarette, and beyond everything else, she was afraid, listening to the sick voice inside her which whispered, "Get away from here. Get away." "But this is what I came so far to find," she told herself. "I can't go back. Besides, he would laugh at me if I tried to get back out through that gate."
Trying not to look up at the house, and she could not even have told its color or its style or its size, except that it was enormous and dark, looking down over her, she started the car again and drove up the last bit of driveway directly to the steps, which led in a forthright, no-escape manner onto the veranda and aimed at the front door. The drive turned off on either side to encircle the house, and probably later she could take her car around and find a building of some kind to put it in. Now she felt uneasily that she did not care to cut off her means of departure too completely. She turned the car just enough to move it off to one side, out of the way of later arrivals. It would be a pity, she thought grimly, for anyone to get a first look at this house with anything so comforting as a human automobile parked in front of it, and got out, taking her suitcase and her coat. Well, she thought inadequately, here I am. It was an act of moral strength to lift her foot and set it on the bottom step. And she thought that her deep unwillingness to touch Hill House for the first time came directly from the vivid feeling that it was waiting for her, evil but patient. Journeys end in lovers meeting, she thought, remembering her song at last, and laughed, standing on the steps of Hill House. Journeys end in lovers meeting. And she put her feet down firmly and went up to the veranda and the door. Hill House came around her in a rush. She was enshadowed, and the sound of her feet on the wood of the veranda was an outrage in the utter silence, as though it had been a very long time since feet stamped across the boards of Hill House. She brought her hand up to the heavy iron knocker that had a child's face, determined to make more noise, and yet more, so that Hill House might be very sure she was there. And then the door opened without warning, and she was looking at a woman who, if like ever merited like, could only be the wife of the man at the gate.
"Mrs. Dudley," she said, catching her breath. "I'm Eleanor Vance. I'm expected."
Silently, the woman stood aside. Her apron was clean, her hair was neat, and yet she gave an indefinable air of dirtiness, quite in keeping with her husband, and the suspicious sullenness of her face was a match for the malicious petulance of his. No, Eleanor told herself, it's partly because everything seems so dark around here, and partly because I expected that man's wife to be ugly. If I hadn't seen Hill House, would I be so unfair to these people? They only take care of it after all. The hall in which they stood was over full of dark wood and weighty carving, dim under the heaviness of the staircase, which lay back from the farther end. Above there seemed to be another hallway, going the width of the house. She could see a wide landing, and then across the staircase well, doors closed along the upper hall. On either side of her now were great double doors, carved with fruit and grain and living things. All the doors she could see in this house were closed. When she tried to speak, her voice was drowned in the dim stillness, and she had to try again to make a sound.
"Can you take me to my room?"
she asked at last, gesturing toward her suitcase on the floor, and watching the wavering reflection of her hand going down and down into the deep shadows of the polished floor.
"I gather I'm the first one here. You did say you were Mrs. Dudley?" "I think I'm going to cry," she thought, "like a child sobbing and wailing. I don't like it here."
Mrs. Dudley turned and started up the stairs, and Eleanor took up her suitcase and followed, hurrying after anything else alive in this house.
"No," she thought, "I don't like it here."
Mrs. Dudley came to the top of the stairs and turned right, and Eleanor saw that with some rare perception the builders of the house had given up any attempt at style. Probably, after realizing what the house was going to be whether they chose it or not, and had, on this second floor, set in a long, straight hall to accommodate the doors to the bedrooms. She had a quick impression of the builders finishing off the second and third stories of the house with a kind of indecent haste, eager to finish their work without embellishment and get out of there, following the simplest possible pattern for the rooms. At the left end of the hall was a second staircase, probably going from servants' rooms on the third floor, down past the second to the service rooms below. At the right end of the hall, another room had been set in, perhaps since it was on the end, to get the maximum amount of sun and light. Except for a continuation of the dark woodwork and what looked like a series of poorly executed engravings arranged with unlovely exactness along the hall in either direction, nothing broke the straightness of the hall except the series of doors, all closed. Mrs. Dudley crossed the hall and opened a door, perhaps at random.
"This is the blue room," she said.
From the turn in the staircase, Eleanor assumed that the room would be at the front of the house.
"Sister Anne, Sister Anne," she thought, and moved gratefully toward the light from the room. "How nice," she said,
standing in the doorway, but only from the sense that she must say something. It was not nice at all, and only barely tolerable. It held enclosed the same clashing disharmony that marked Hill House throughout. Mrs. Dudley turned aside to let Eleanor come in and spoke, apparently, to the wall.
"I set dinner on the dining room sideboard at 6 sharp, she said. "You can serve yourselves. I clear up in the morning. I have breakfast ready for you at 9. That's the way I agreed to do. I can't keep the rooms up the way you'd like, but there's no one else you could get that would help me. I don't wait on people. What I agreed to, it doesn't mean I wait on people."
Eleanor nodded, standing uncertainly in the doorway.
"I don't stay after I set out dinner," Mrs. Dudley went on. "Not after it begins to get dark. I leave before dark comes."
"I know," Eleanor said.
"We live over in the town, 6 miles away."
"Yes," Eleanor said, remembering Hillsdale.
so there won't be anyone around if you need help.
I understand.
We couldn't even hear you in the night.
I don't suppose...
No one could. No one lives any nearer than the town. No one else will come any nearer than that.
I know, Eleanor said tiredly.
In the night, Mrs. Dudley said, and smiled outright. In the dark, she said, and closed the door behind her. Eleanor almost giggled, thinking of herself calling, Oh, Mrs. Dudley, I need your help in the dark. And then she shivered. 2. She stood alone, beside her suitcase, her coat still hanging over her arm, thoroughly miserable, telling herself helplessly, Journeys end in lovers' meeting, and wishing she could go home. Behind her lay the dark staircase, and the polished hallway, and the great front door, and Mrs. Dudley and Dudley laughing at the gate and the padlocks, and Hillsdale, and the cottage of flowers, and the family at the inn, and the oleander garden, and the house with the stone lions in front, and they had brought her, under Dr. Montague's unerring eye, to the blue room at Hill House.
It's awful, she thought, unwilling to move, since motion might imply acceptance, a gesture of moving in. It's awful, and I don't want to stay.
But there was nowhere else to go. Dr. Montague's letter had brought her this far and could take her no farther. After a minute she sighed and shook her head and walked across to set her suitcase down on the bed.
Here I am, in the blue room of Hill House, she said half aloud, although it was real enough, and beyond all question, a blue room.
There were blue dimity curtains over the two windows, which looked out over the roof of the veranda onto the lawn, and a blue figured rug on the floor, and a blue spread on the bed and a blue quilt at the foot. The walls, dark woodwork to shoulder height, were blue figured paper above, with a design of tiny blue flowers, wreathed and gathered and delicate. Perhaps someone had once hoped to lighten the air of the blue room in Hill House with a dainty wallpaper, not seeing how such a hope would evaporate in Hill House, leaving only the faintest hint of its existence, like an almost inaudible echo of sobbing far away. Eleanor shook herself, turning to see the room complete. It had an unbelievably faulty design, which left it chillingly wrong in all its dimensions, so that the walls seemed always in one direction a fraction longer than the eye could endure, and in another direction, a fraction less than the barest possible tolerable length. This is where they want me to sleep, Eleanor thought incredulously. What nightmares are waiting, shadowed in those high corners? What breath of mindless fear will drift across my mouth? And shook herself again. Really, she told herself. Really, Eleanor. She opened her suitcase on the high bed and, slipping off her stiff city shoes with grateful relief, began to unpack. At the back of her mind, the thoroughly female conviction that the best way to soothe a troubled mind is to put on comfortable shoes. Yesterday, packing her suitcase in the city, she had chosen clothes which she assumed would be suitable for wearing in an isolated country house. She had even run out at the last minute and bought, excited at her own daring, 2 pairs of slacks, something she had not worn in more years than she could remember.
Mother would be furious, she had thought, packing the slacks down at the bottom of her suitcase, so that she need not take them out, need never let anyone know she had them, in case she lost her courage.
Now, in Hill House, they no longer seemed so new. She unpacked carelessly, setting dresses crookedly on hangers, tossing the slacks into the bottom drawer of the high marble-topped dresser, throwing her city shoes into a corner of the great wardrobe. She was bored already with the book she had brought. I am probably not going to stay anyway, she thought, and closed her empty suitcase and set it in the wardrobe corner.
It won't take me 5 minutes to pack again.
She discovered that she had been trying to put her suitcase down without making a sound, and then realized that while she unpacked, she had been in her stocking feet, trying to move as silently as possible, as though stillness were vital in Hill House. She remembered that Mrs. Dudley had also walked without sound. When she stood still in the middle of the room, the pressing silence of Hill House came back all around her. "I am like a small creature swallowed whole by a monster," she thought, "and the monster feels my tiny little movements inside."
"No,"
she said aloud, and the one word echoed. She went quickly across the room and pushed aside the blue dimity curtains, but the sunlight came only palely through the thick glass of the windows, and she could see only the roof of the veranda and a stretch of the lawn beyond. Somewhere down there was her little car, which could take her away again.
"Journey's end in lover's meeting," she thought. "It was my own choice to come."
Then she realized that she was afraid to go back across the room. She was standing with her back to the window, looking from the door, to the wardrobe, to the dresser, to the bed, telling herself that she was not afraid at all, when she heard, far below, the sounds of a car door slamming, and then quick footsteps almost dancing up the steps and across the veranda, and then, shockingly, the crash of the great iron knocker coming down.
"Why," she thought, "there are other people coming. I am not going to be here all alone."
Almost laughing, she ran across the room and into the hall to look down the staircase into the hallway below.
"Thank heaven you're here," she said, peering through the dimness. "Thank heaven somebody's here."
She realized, without surprise, that she was speaking as though Mrs. Dudley could not hear her, although Mrs. Dudley stood, straight and pale, in the hall.
"Come on up," Eleanor said. "You'll have to carry your own suitcase."
She was breathless and seemed unable to stop talking. Her usual shyness melted away by relief.
"My name's Eleanor Vance," she said, "and I'm so glad you're here."
"I'm Theodora, just Theodora."
"This bloody house. It's just as bad up here. Come on up. Make her give you the room next to mine."
Theodora came up the heavy stairway after Mrs. Dudley, looking incredulously at the stained glass window on the landing, the marble urn in a niche, the patterned carpet. Her suitcase was considerably larger than Eleanor's and considerably more luxurious, and Eleanor came forward to help her, glad that her own things were safely put away out of sight.
"Wait till you see the bedrooms," Eleanor said. "Mine used to be the embalming room, I think."
"It's the home I've always dreamed of," Theodora said. "A little hideaway where I can be alone with my thoughts. Particularly if my thoughts happen to be about murder or suicide or..."
"Green room," Mrs. Dudley said coldly, and Eleanor sensed with a quick turn of apprehension that flippant or critical talk about the house bothered Mrs. Dudley in some manner. "Maybe she thinks it can hear us," Eleanor thought, and then was sorry she had thought it. Perhaps she shivered, because Theodora turned with a quick smile and touched her shoulder gently, reassuringly.
"She is charming," Eleanor thought, smiling back. "Not at all the sort of person who belongs in this dreary, dark place, but then, probably, I don't belong here either. I am not the sort of person for Hill House, but I can't think of anybody who would be."
She laughed then, watching Theodora's expression, as she stood in the doorway of the green room.
"Good Lord," Theodora said, looking sideways at Eleanor. "How perfectly enchanting, a positive bower."
"I set dinner on the dining room sideboard at 6 sharp, Mrs. Dudley said. "You can serve yourselves. I clear up in the morning. I have breakfast ready for you at 9. That's the way I agreed to do."
"You're frightened," Theodora said, watching Eleanor.
"I can't keep the rooms up the way you'd like, but there's no one else you could get that would help me. I don't wait on people. What I agreed to, it doesn't mean I wait on people."
"It was just when I thought I was all alone," Eleanor said.
"I don't stay after 6, not after it begins to get dark."
"I'm here now," Theodora said. "So it's all right. We have a connecting bathroom."
Eleanor said absurdly.
The rooms are exactly alike.
Green dimity curtains hung over the windows in Theodora's room. The wallpaper was decked with green garlands, the bedspread and quilt were green, the marble-topped dresser and the huge wardrobe were the same.
I've never seen such awful places in my life, Eleanor said, her voice rising.
Like the very best hotels, Theodora said, or any good girls' camp.
I leave before dark comes, Mrs. Dudley went on.
No one can hear you if you scream in the night, Eleanor told Theodora.
She realized that she was clutching at the doorknob, and under Theodora's quizzical eye unclenched her fingers and walked steadily across the room.
We'll have to find some way of opening these windows, she said.
So there won't be anyone around if you need help, Mrs. Dudley said. We couldn't hear you even in the night. No one could.
All right now, Theodora asked, and Eleanor nodded.
No one lives any nearer than the town. No one else will come any nearer than that.
You're probably just hungry, Theodora said, and I'm starved myself.
She set her suitcase on the bed and slipped off her shoes.
Nothing, she said, upsets me more than being hungry. I snarl and snap and burst into tears.
She lifted a pair of softly tailored slacks out of the suitcase.
In the night, Mrs. Dudley said.
She smiled.
In the dark, she said, and closed the door behind her.
After a minute, Eleanor said, she also walks without making a sound.
Delightful old body,
Theodora turned, regarding her room.
I take it back, that about the best hotels, she said. It's a little bit like a boarding school I went to for a while.
Come and see mine, Eleanor said.
She opened the bathroom door and led the way into her blue room.
I was all unpacked and thinking about packing again when you came.
Poor baby, you're certainly starving. All I could think of when I got a look at the place from outside was what fun it would be to stand out there and watch it burn down. Maybe before we leave.
It was terrible, being here alone.
You should have seen that boarding school of mine during vacations.
Theodora went back into her own room, and with the sense of movement and the sound in the two rooms, Eleanor felt more cheerful. She straightened her clothes on the hangers in the wardrobe and set her books evenly on the bed table.
You know, Theodora called from the other room, it is kind of like the first day at school. Everything's ugly and strange, and you don't know anybody, and you're afraid everyone's going to laugh at your clothes.
Eleanor, who had opened the dresser drawer to take out a pair of slacks, stopped and then laughed and threw the slacks on the bed.
Did I understand correctly, Theodora went on, that Mrs. Dudley is not going to come if we scream in the night?
It was not what she agreed to. Did you meet the amiable old retainer at the gate?
We had a lovely chat. He said I couldn't come in, and I said I could, and then I tried to run him down with my car, but he jumped.
Look, do you think we have to sit around here in our rooms and wait? I'd like to change into something comfortable,
unless we dress for dinner, do you think?
I won't if you won't.
I won't if you won't. They can't fight both of us. Anyway, let's get out of here and go exploring. I would very much like to get this roof off from over my head.
It gets dark so early in these hills, with all the trees.
Eleanor went to the window again, but there was still sunlight slanting across the lawn.
It won't be really dark for nearly an hour. I want to go outside and roll on the grass.
Eleanor chose a red sweater, thinking that in this room, in this house, the red of the sweater and the red of the sandals bought to match it would almost certainly be utterly at war with each other, although they had been close enough yesterday in the city. Serves me right anyway, she thought, for wanting to wear such things I never did before. But she looked oddly well, it seemed to her, as she stood by the long mirror on the wardrobe door, almost comfortable.
Do you have any idea who else is coming, she asked, or when?
Dr. Montague, Theodora said. I thought he'd be here before anyone else.
Have you known Dr. Montague long?
Never met him, Theodora said. Have you?
Never. You almost ready?
All ready,
Theodora came through the bathroom door into Eleanor's room.
She is lovely, Eleanor thought, turning to look. I wish I were lovely.
Theodora was wearing a vivid yellow shirt, and Eleanor laughed and said,
You bring more light into this room than the window.
Theodora came over and regarded herself approvingly in Eleanor's mirror. I feel, she said, that in this dreary place it is our duty to look as bright as possible. I approve of your red sweater. The two of us will be visible from one end of Hill House to the other. Still looking into the mirror, she asked,
I suppose Dr. Montague wrote to you?
Yes, Eleanor was embarrassed.
I didn't know at first whether it was a joke or not, but my brother-in-law checked up on him.
You know, Theodora said slowly, up until the last minute, when I got to the gates, I guess, I never really thought there would be a Hill House. You don't go around expecting things like this to happen.
But some of us go around hoping, Eleanor said.
Theodora laughed and swung around before the mirror and caught Eleanor's hand. Fellow babe in the woods, she said, let's go exploring.
We can't go far away from the house.
I promise not to go one step farther than you say.
Do you think we have to check in and out with Mrs. Dudley?
She probably watches every move we make anyway. It's probably part of what she agreed to.
Agreed to with whom, I wonder? Count Dracula?
You think he lives in Hill House?
I think he spends all his weekends here. I swear I saw bats in the woodwork downstairs.
Follow, follow.
They ran downstairs, moving with color and life against the dark woodwork and the clouded light of the stairs, their feet clattering, and Mrs. Dudley stood below and watched them in silence.
We're going exploring, Mrs. Dudley, Theodora said lightly. We'll be outside somewhere.
But we'll be back soon, Eleanor added.
I said dinner on the sideboard at 6 o'clock, Mrs. Dudley explained.
Eleanor, tugging, got the great front door open. It was just as heavy as it looked, and she thought, we will really have to find some easier way to get back in.
Leave this open, she said over her shoulder to Theodora. It's terribly heavy. Get one of those big vases and prop it open.
Theodora wheeled one of the big stone vases from the corner of the hall, and they stood it in the doorway and rested the door against it. The fading sunlight outside was bright after the darkness of the house, and the air was fresh and sweet. Behind them, Mrs. Dudley moved the vase again, and the big door slammed shut.
Lovable old thing, Theodora said to the closed door.
For a moment, her face was thin with anger, and Eleanor thought, I hope she never looks at me like that, and was surprised, remembering that she was always shy with strangers, awkward and timid, and yet had come in no more than half an hour to think of Theodora as close and vital, someone whose anger would be frightening.
I think,
Eleanor said hesitantly, and relaxed, because when she spoke, Theodora turned and smiled again.
I think that during the daylight hours, when Mrs. Dudley is around, I shall find myself some absorbing occupation far, far from the house, rolling the tennis court, perhaps, or tending the grapes in the hothouse.
Perhaps you could help Dudley with the gates,
or look for nameless graves in the nettle patch.
They were standing by the rail of the veranda. From there they could see down the drive to the point where it turned among the trees again, and down over the soft curve of the hills to the distant small line which might have been the main highway, the road back to the cities from which they had come. Except for the wires which ran to the house from a spot among the trees, there was no evidence that Hill House belonged in any way to the rest of the world. Eleanor turned and followed the veranda. It went, apparently, all around the house.
Oh, look, she said, turning the corner.
Behind the house, the hills were piled in great pressing masses, flooded with summer green now, rich and still.
It's why they called it Hill House, Eleanor said inadequately.
It's altogether Victorian, Theodora said.
They simply wallowed in this kind of great, billowing, overdone sort of thing and buried themselves in folds of velvet and tassels and purple plush. Anyone before them or after would have put this house right up there on top of those hills where it belongs instead of snuggling it down here.
If it were on top of the hill, everyone could see it. I vote for keeping it well hidden where it is.
All the time I'm here, I'm going to be terrified, Theodora said, thinking one of those hills will fall on us.
They don't fall on you. They just slide down, silently and secretly, rolling over you while you try to run away.
Thank you, Theodora said in a small voice. What Mrs. Dudley has started, you have completed nicely. I shall pack and go home at once.
Believing her for a minute, Eleanor turned and stared, and then saw the amusement on her face and thought,
she's much braver than I am.
Unexpectedly, although it was later to become a familiar note, a recognizable attribute of what was to mean Theodora in Eleanor's mind, Theodora caught at Eleanor's thought and answered her.
Don't be so afraid all the time, she said, and reached out to touch Eleanor's cheek with one finger. We never know where our courage is coming from.
Then quickly, she ran down the steps and out onto the lawn between the tall grouped trees.
Hurry, she called back. I want to see if there's a brook somewhere.
We can't go too far, Eleanor said, following.
Like two children, they ran across the grass, both welcoming the sudden openness of clear spaces after even a little time in Hill House, their feet grateful for the grass after the solid floors, with an instinct almost animal, they followed the sound and smell of water.
Over here, Theodora said, a little path.
It led them tantalizingly closer to the sound of the water, doubling back and forth through the trees, giving them occasional glimpses down the hill to the driveway, leading them around out of sight of the house, across a rocky meadow, and always downhill. As they came away from the house and out of the trees to places where the sunlight could still find them, Eleanor was easier. Although she could see that the sun was dropping disturbingly closer to the heaped hills, she called to Theodora, but Theodora only called back,
"Follow, follow,"
and ran down the path.
Suddenly she stopped, breathless and tottering, on the very edge of the brook, which had leaped up before her almost without warning.
Eleanor, coming more slowly behind, caught at her hand and held her back, and then laughing, they fell together against the bank, which sloped sharply down to the brook.
"They like to surprise you around here," Theodora said, gasping.
"Serve you right if you went diving in," Eleanor said, "running like that." "It's pretty, isn't it?"
The water of the brook moved quickly, in little lighted ripples. On the other side, the grass grew down to the edge of the water, and yellow and blue flowers leaned their heads over. There was a rounded, soft hill there, and perhaps more meadow beyond, and far away, the great hills, still catching the light of the sun.
"It's pretty," Theodora said with finality. "I'm sure I've been here before," Eleanor said. "In a book of fairy tales, perhaps."
"I'm sure of it.
Can you skip rocks? This is where the princess comes to meet the magic golden fish who is really a prince in disguise."
"He couldn't draw much water, that golden fish of yours. It can't be more than 3 inches deep."
"There are stepping stones to go across, and little fish swimming. Tiny ones. Minnows?"
"Princes in disguise, all of them," Theodora stretched in the sun on the bank and yawned.
"Tadpoles?" she suggested.
"Minnows. It's too late for tadpoles, silly. But I bet we can find frogs' eggs. I used to catch minnows in my hands and let them go."
"What a farmer's wife you might have made."
"This is a place for picnics, with lunch beside the brook and hard-boiled eggs," Theodora laughed.
"Chicken salad and chocolate cake.
Lemonade in a thermos bottle. Spilled salt."
Theodora rolled over luxuriously. "They're wrong about ants, you know.
There were almost never ants.
Cows, maybe, but I don't think I ever did see an ant on a picnic."
"Was there always a bull in a field? Did someone always say, 'But we can't go through that field, that's where the bull is'?"
Theodora opened one eye,
Did you used to have a comic uncle? Everyone always laughed, whatever he said, and he used to tell you not to be afraid of the bull. If the bull came after you, all you had to do was grab the ring through his nose and swing him around your head.
Eleanor tossed a pebble into the brook and watched it sink clearly to the bottom.
Did you have a lot of uncles?
Thousands. Do you?
After a minute, Eleanor said,
Oh, yes. Big ones and little ones and fat ones and thin ones. Do you have an Aunt Edna?
Aunt Muriel?
Kind of thin, rimless glasses?
A garnet brooch, Eleanor said.
Does she wear a kind of dark red dress to family parties?
Lace cuffs?
Then I think we must really be related, Theodora said.
Did you used to have braces on your teeth?
No, freckles.
I went to that private school, where they made me learn to curtsy. I always had colds, all winter long. My mother made me wear woolen stockings.
My mother made my brother take me to dances, and I used to curtsy like mad. My brother still hates me.
I fell down during the graduation procession.
I forgot my lines in the operetta.
I used to write poetry.
Yes, Theodora said.
I'm positive we're cousins.
She sat up, laughing, and then Eleanor said,
Be quiet. There's something moving over there.
Frozen, shoulders pressed together, they stared, watching the spot of hillside across the brook where the grass moved, watching something unseen move slowly across the bright green hill, chilling the sunlight and the dancing little brook.
What is it?
Eleanor said in a breath. And Theodora put a strong hand on her wrist.
It's gone,
Theodora said clearly, and the sun came back and it was warm again.
It was a rabbit, Theodora said.
I couldn't see it,
Eleanor said.
I saw it the minute you spoke, Theodora said firmly.
It was a rabbit. It went over the hill and out of sight.
We've been away too long,
Eleanor said, and looked up anxiously at the sun touching the hilltops. She got up quickly and found that her legs were stiff from kneeling on the damp grass.
Imagine two splendid old picnic-going girls like us, Theodora said, afraid of a rabbit.
Eleanor leaned down and held out a hand to help her up.
We'd really better hurry back, she said,
and because she did not herself understand her compelling anxiety, added,
The others might be there by now.
We'll have to come back here for a picnic soon,
Theodora said, following carefully up the path, which went steadily uphill.
We really must have a good old-fashioned picnic down by the brook.
We can ask Mrs. Dudley to hard-boil some eggs.
Eleanor stopped on the path, not turning.
Theodora, she said. I don't think I can, you know. I don't think I really will be able to do it.
Eleanor. Theodora put an arm across her shoulders. Would you let them separate us now?
Now that we've found out we're cousins?
Chapter 3 The sun went down smoothly behind the hills, slipping almost eagerly at last into the pillowy masses. There were already long shadows on the lawn as Eleanor and Theodora came up the path toward the side veranda of Hill House, blessedly hiding its mad face in the growing darkness.
There's someone waiting there,
Eleanor said, walking more quickly, and so saw Luke for the first time.
Journeys end in lovers' meeting, she thought, and could only say inadequately,
Are you looking for us?
He had come to the veranda rail, looking down at them in the dusk, and now he bowed with a deep, welcoming gesture.
These being dead, he said, then dead must I be. Ladies, if you are the ghostly inhabitants of Hill House, I am here forever.
He's really kind of silly, Eleanor thought sternly, and Theodora said,
Sorry we weren't here to meet you. We've been exploring.
A sour old beldam with a face of curds welcomed us, thank you, he said. Howdy do, she told me. I hope I see you alive when I come back in the morning and your dinner's on the sideboard. Saying which, she departed in a late-model convertible with first and second murderers.
Mrs. Dudley, Theodora said, First murderer must be Dudley at the gate. I suppose the other was Count Dracula, a wholesome family. Since we are listing our cast of characters, he said, my name is Luke Sanderson.
Eleanor was startled into speaking. Then you're one of the family, the people who own Hill House, not one of Dr. Montague's guests.
I am one of the family. Someday this stately pile will belong to me. Until then, however, I am here as one of Dr. Montague's guests. Theodora giggled. We, she said, are Eleanor and Theodora, two little girls who were planning a picnic down by the brook and got scared home by a rabbit. I go in mortal terror of rabbits, Luke agreed politely. May I come if I carry the picnic basket? You may bring your ukulele and strum to us while we eat chicken sandwiches. Is Dr. Montague here?
He's inside, Luke said, gloating over his haunted house.
They were silent for a minute, wanting to move closer together, and then Theodora said thinly,
it doesn't sound so funny, does it? Now it's getting dark.
Ladies, welcome.
And the great front door opened.
Come inside. I am Dr. Montague.
2. The four of them stood, for the first time, in the wide, dark entrance hall of Hill House. Around them, the house steadied and located them. Above them, the hills slept watchfully. Small eddies of air and sound and movement stirred and waited and whispered, and the center of consciousness was somehow the small space where they stood. Four separated people, and looked, trustingly, at one another.
I am very happy that everyone arrived safely and on time, Dr. Montague said. Welcome, all of you, welcome to Hill House, although perhaps that sentiment ought to come more properly from you, my boy. In any case, welcome, welcome. Luke, my boy, can you make a martini?
3.
Dr. Montague raised his glass and sipped hopefully and sighed.
Fair, he said. Only fair, my boy. To our success at Hill House, however. How would one reckon success exactly in an affair like this? Luke inquired curiously. The doctor laughed. Put it then, he said, that I hope that all of us will have an exciting visit, and my book will rock my colleagues back on their heels. I cannot call your visit a vacation, although to some it might seem so, because I am hopeful of your working. Although work, of course, depends largely upon what is to be done, does it not? Notes, he said with relief, as though fixing upon one unshakable solidity in a world of fog. Notes. We will take notes. To some, a not unbearable task.
So long as no one makes any puns about spirits and spirits, Theodora said, holding out her glass to Luke to be filled.
Spirits, the doctor peered at her. Spirits. Yes, indeed, of course. None of us,
he hesitated, frowning.
Certainly not, he said, and took three quick, agitated sips at his cocktail.
Everything's so strange, Eleanor said. I mean, this morning I was wondering what Hill House would be like. And now I can't believe that it's real. And we're here.
They were sitting in a small room chosen by the doctor who had led them into it down a narrow corridor, fumbling a little at first, but then finding his way. It was not a cozy room, certainly. It had an unpleasantly high ceiling and a narrow tiled fireplace, which looked chill in spite of the fire which Luke had lighted at once. The chairs in which they sat were rounded and slippery, and the light coming through the colored beaded shades of the lamps sent shadows into the corners. The overwhelming sense of the room was purple. Beneath their feet, the carpeting glowed in dim, convoluted patterns. The walls were papered and gilt, and a marble cupid beamed fatuously down at them from the mantel. When they were silent for a moment, the quiet weight of the house pressed down from all around them.
Eleanor, wondering if she were really here at all and not dreaming of Hill House from some safe spot impossibly remote, looked slowly and carefully around the room, telling herself that this was real. These things existed. From the tiles around the fireplace to the marble Cupid, these people were going to be her friends. The doctor was round and rosy and bearded and looked as though he might be more suitably established before a fire in a pleasant little sitting room with a cat on his knee and a rosy little wife to bring him jellied scones. And yet he was undeniably the Dr. Montague who had guided Eleanor here, a little man both knowledgeable and stubborn. Across the fire from the doctor was Theodora, who had gone unerringly to the most nearly comfortable chair, had wriggled herself into it somehow with her legs over the arm and her head tucked in against the back. She was like a cat, Eleanor thought, and clearly a cat waiting for its dinner. Luke was not still for a minute, but moved back and forth across the shadows, filling glasses, stirring the fire, touching the marble Cupid. He was bright in the firelight and restless. They were all silent, looking into the fire, lazy after their several journeys, and Eleanor thought, I am the fourth person in this room. I am one of them. I belong.
Since we are all here, Luke said suddenly, as though there had been no pause in the conversation, shouldn't we get acquainted? We know only names so far. I know that it is Eleanor here who is wearing a red sweater, and consequently it must be Theodora who wears yellow.
Dr. Montague has a beard, Theodora said, so you must be Luke. And you are Theodora, Eleanor said, because I am Eleanor.
And Eleanor, she told herself triumphantly, who belongs, who is talking easily, who is sitting by the fire with her friends. Therefore you are wearing the red sweater, Theodora explained to her soberly.
I have no beard, Luke said, so he must be Dr. Montague.
I have a beard, Dr. Montague said, pleased, and looked around at them with a happy beam. My wife, he told them, likes a man to wear a beard. Many women, on the other hand, find a beard distasteful. A clean-shaven man, you'll excuse me, my boy, never looks fully dressed, my wife tells me.
He held out his glass to Luke.
Now that I know which of us is me, Luke said, let me identify myself further. I am, in private life, assuming that this is public life and the rest of the world is actually private, let me see. A bullfighter. Yes, a bullfighter.
I love my love with a B, Eleanor said in spite of herself, because he is bearded.
Very true, Luke nodded at her. That makes me Dr. Montague. I live in Bangkok and my hobby is bothering women. Not at all, Dr. Montague protested, amused. I live in Belmont.
Theodora laughed and gave Luke that quick, understanding glance she had earlier given Eleanor. Eleanor, watching, thought wryly that it might sometimes be oppressive to be for long around one so immediately in tune, so perceptive as Theodora.
I am by profession an artist's model, Eleanor said quickly to silence her own thoughts. I live a mad, abandoned life, draped in a shawl and going from garret to garret.
Are you heartless and wanton? Luke asked. Or are you one of the fragile creatures who will fall in love with the Lord's son and pine away?
Losing all your beauty and coughing a good deal, Theodora added. I rather think I have a heart of gold, Eleanor said reflectively. At any rate, my affairs are the talk of the cafes.
Dear me, she thought. Dear me. Alas, Theodora said, I am a lord's daughter. Ordinarily I go clad in silk and lace and cloth of gold, but I have borrowed my maid's finery to appear among you. I may, of course, become so enamored of the common life that I will never go back, and the poor girl will have to get herself new clothes.
And you, Dr. Montague?
He smiled in the firelight.
A pilgrim. A wanderer. Truly a congenial little group, Luke said approvingly. Destined to be inseparable friends, in fact. A courtesan,
a pilgrim, a princess, and a bullfighter. Hill House has surely never seen our like.
I will give the honor to Hill House, Theodora said. I have never seen its like.
She rose, carrying her glass, and went to examine a bowl of glass flowers.
What did they call this room, do you suppose?
A parlor, perhaps, Dr. Montague said. Perhaps a boudoir. I thought we would be more comfortable in here than in one of the other rooms. As a matter of fact, I think we ought to regard this room as our center of operations, a kind of common room. It may not be cheerful.
Of course it's cheerful, Theodora said staunchly. There is nothing more exhilarating than maroon upholstery and oak paneling. And what is that in the corner there, a sedan chair?
Tomorrow you will see the other rooms, the doctor told her. If we are going to have this for a rumpus room, Luke said, I propose we move in something to sit on. I cannot perch for long on anything here. I skid, he said confidentially to Eleanor. Tomorrow, the doctor said, tomorrow, as a matter of fact, we will explore the entire house and arrange things to please ourselves. And now, if you have all finished, I suggest that we determine what Mrs. Dudley has done about our dinner.
Theodora moved at once and then stopped, bewildered. Someone is going to have to lead me, she said. I can't possibly tell where the dining room is.
She pointed. That door leads to the long passage and then into the front hall, she said. The doctor chuckled. Wrong, my dear. That door leads to the conservatory. He rose to lead the way. I have studied a map of the house, he said complacently, and I believe that we have only to go through the door here, down the passage into the front hall and across the hall and through the billiard room to find the dining room. Not hard, he said. One should get into practice.
Why did they mix themselves up so? Theodora asked. Why so many little odd rooms?
Maybe they like to hide from each other, Luke said.
I can't understand why they wanted everything so dark, Theodora said.
She and Eleanor were following Dr. Montague down the passage, and Luke came behind, lingering to look into the drawer of a narrow table, and wondering aloud to himself at the valance of cupid heads and ribbon bunches which topped the paneling in the dark hall. Some of these rooms are entirely inside rooms, the doctor said from ahead of them. No windows, no access to the outdoors at all. However, a series of enclosed rooms is not altogether surprising in a house of this period, particularly when you recall that what windows they did have were heavily shrouded with hangings and draperies within and shrubbery without. Ah! He opened the passage door and led them into the front hall. Now, he said, considering the doorways opposite, two smaller doors flanking the great central double door. Now, he said, and selected the nearest. The house does have its little oddities, he continued, holding the door so that they might pass through into the dark room beyond. Luke, come and hold this open so I can find the dining room. Moving cautiously, he crossed the dark room and opened a door, and they followed him into the pleasantest room they had seen so far, more pleasant certainly because of the lights and the sight and smell of food. I congratulate myself, he said, rubbing his hands happily. I have led you to civilization through the uncharted wastes of Hill House.
We ought to make a practice of leaving every door wide open. Theodora glanced nervously over her shoulder. I hate this wandering around in the dark.
You'd have to prop them open with something then, Eleanor said. Every door in this house swings shut when you let go of it.
Tomorrow, Dr. Montague said, I will make a note. Door stops. He moved happily toward the sideboard, where Mrs. Dudley had set a warming oven and an impressive row of covered dishes. The table was set for four with a lavish display of candles and damask and heavy silver. No stinting, I see, Luke said, taking up a fork with a gesture which would have confirmed his aunt's worst suspicions. We get the company silver.
I think Mrs. Dudley is proud of the house, Eleanor said.
She doesn't intend to give us a poor table at any rate, the doctor said, peering into the warming oven. This is an excellent arrangement, I think. It gets Mrs. Dudley well away from here before dark and enables us to have our dinners without her uninviting company. Perhaps, Luke said, regarding the plate which he was filling generously, perhaps I did good Mrs. Dudley. Why must I continue to think of her perversely as good Mrs. Dudley? Perhaps I really did her an injustice. She said she hoped to find me alive in the morning and our dinner was in the oven. Now I suspect that she intended me to die of gluttony.
What keeps her here? Eleanor asked Dr. Montague. Why does she and her husband stay on, alone, in this house?
As I understand it, the Dudleys have taken care of Hill House ever since anyone can remember. Certainly the Sandersons were happy enough to keep them on. But tomorrow...
Theodora giggled.
Mrs. Dudley is probably the only true surviving member of the family to whom Hill House really belongs. I think she's only waiting until all the Sanderson heirs, that's you, Luke, die off in various horrible ways, and then she gets the house and the fortune in jewels buried in the cellar. Or maybe she and Dudley hoard their gold in the secret chamber, or there's oil under the house. There are no secret chambers in Hill House, the doctor said with finality. Naturally, that possibility has been suggested before, and I think I may say with assurance that no such romantic devices exist here. But tomorrow, in any case, oil is definitely old hat. Nothing at all to discover on the property these days, Luke told Theodora. The very least Mrs. Dudley could murder me for in cold blood is uranium.
Or just the pure fun of it, Theodora said. Yes, Eleanor said, but why are we here?
For a long minute, the three of them looked at her. Theodora and Luke, curiously. The doctor, gravely. Then Theodora said,
just what I was going to ask. Why are we here? What is wrong with Hill House? What is going to happen?
Tomorrow?
No, Theodora said, almost petulantly. We are three adult, intelligent people. We have all come a long way, Dr. Montague, to meet you here in Hill House. Eleanor wants to know why, and so do I.
Me too, Luke said.
Why did you bring us here, Doctor? Why are you here yourself? How did you hear about Hill House, and why does it have such a reputation, and what really goes on here? What is going to happen?
The doctor frowned unhappily.
I don't know, he said. And then, when Theodora made a quick, irritated gesture, he went on. I know very little more about the house than you do. And naturally, I intended to tell you everything I do know. As for what is going to happen, I will learn that when you do. But tomorrow is soon enough to talk about it, I think. Daylight?
Not for me, Theodora said.
I assure you, the doctor said, that Hill House will be quiet tonight. There is a pattern to these things, as though psychic phenomena were subject to laws of a very particular sort.
I really think we ought to talk it over tonight, Luke said.
We're not afraid, Eleanor added.
The doctor sighed again.
Suppose, he said slowly, you heard the story of Hill House and decided not to stay. How would you leave tonight?
He looked around at them again, quickly.
The gates are locked. Hill House has a reputation for insistent hospitality. It seemingly dislikes letting its guests get away. The last person who tried to leave Hill House in darkness, it was 18 years ago, I grant you, was killed at the turn in the driveway, where his horse bolted and crushed him against the big tree. Suppose I tell you about Hill House and one of you wants to leave. Tomorrow, at least, we could see that you got safely to the village.
But we're not going to run away, Theodora said. I'm not, and Eleanor isn't, and Luke isn't.
Stoutly, upon the ramparts, Luke agreed.
You are a mutinous group of assistants. After dinner, then, we will retire to our little boudoir for coffee and a little of the good brandy Luke has in his suitcase, and I...